Okay.
All right, everybody.
Recording.
I can't begin to share the way I've done for many, many years, which is good morning. It's not a good morning at all. I was about 7 or 8 minutes ago, I was upstairs on the third floor, and I saw a scene that I haven't already for 20 years. Three ambulances in a row rushing down the street, and Rabbi Kahana was up there, so he got on to his to the news reports. There's a pigua going on now in a bus in Armon Netziv. 8 people have been shot. We don't know. This is the early. And then there's another pigua in Malchay Yisrael. So that it's not a good morning, though it's Rosh Chodesh. It's Rosh Chodesh Marachas, and at this point it's Mar. And we have to pray. Rabbeinu Shalom, there should be an end to the sorrows of Klal Yisrael. And as Yeshayahu says, Shalom Yishom Abad, that in Yerushalayim there shall no longer be heard Kol Zaka, the sound of crying. There are a lot of ambulances out there, and in Chud Hatzalah, a lot of things are going on. So let's at least learn Torah, and hope and pray that we will add a little bit of source to people who are probably going through very terrible moments. The whole city is in a terrible, terrible state right now. The dance or damsel shiurim today are being sponsored in loving memory of Dr. I. M. Brower, Zal of Chicago, by his family on his 5th birthday. We're learning the evening Nishmas Yitzhak Moshe Ben Gedaliel. And here, the shiur is a very upbeat shiur. It's not going to fit in with the mood of the day, but maybe we need that too. Just another announcement. Rabbi Aaron Ziegler asked me, he's saying the shiur immediately after this, he's saying the shiur here, and it's on practical halacha, and he's going to be talking about meat and dairy in one oven. He asked me to make this announcement, so you should know the topic that he's going to talk about. There's a great deal said about that. The shiur today is on the Haftorah of Parashat Noach. The Haftorah of Parashat Noach is a gem. I know what you're thinking. I say that about every pasuk, about every Rashi, about every Haftorah. I know I say it. And every time I say it, it's true. There are awesome things that take place in the Haftorah, and people can read the Haftorah for a lifetime and not get it. I want to make sure that you're going to get it. There are a number of sections to the Haftorah. I'm going to start with section C. That's a brief section. By section C, what I mean is number one, which is the Haftorah. Number one, that's the entire Haftorah. By the way, this entire Haftorah is also divided into 2 Haftorahs. In the 7 Haftorahs of consolation, from Parshat Va'etchanan until Rosh Hashanah, one of them is Rami Akora, and the other is Aniyah Soara. You'll see there's a separation. Rami Akora is one, and Aniyah Soara is the other, and Parshat Noach. They all are read as one. Chapter 54 in Yeshayahu. Now, on the extreme right-hand side, you'll see an A, a B, and a C. I think we're going to move in the opposite direction. We're going to move from C to B to A. I just want to read the pasuk that's underlined there. Listen to this pasuk very carefully. In the Rambam's great letter that he wrote to the Jews of Yemen, who were undergoing difficult times, he quotes this pasuk: "Kol kli yutzar olechol lo yitzlach. Any weapon sharpened against you shall not succeed. V'chol lashon takum itoch lamishpat tarshi. And any tongue that shall rise against you in judgment shall you can condemn. Zot nachalat avdei Hashem. This is the heritage of the servants of Hashem, and their righteousness is from me. These are the words of Hashem." The Rambam is writing to the Jews. He's writing to the Jews of Yemen, who were going through a period during which there were people who claimed to be messiahs of sorts. There was a tremendous amount of confusion. So the Rambam let them know what a real messiah is and what a false messiah is. But in his introduction, I'm just looking for my cell phone someplace that's making noise. Since I haven't taught for 3 months, I forgot to turn off my cell phone. I'm doing it right now. The Rambam says the following, and we're going to read the text in a moment. The Rambam says throughout history, there are going to be two approaches that will be taken by those who hate Israel. One is going to be the ones who will want to destroy us utterly physically, like Nebuchadnezzar, Titus, Amalek, nations that want to destroy the Jewish people. There are others who consider themselves more intelligent, and they're not going to try to physically destroy us, but they are going to try to wean us away from our religion. They're going to attempt to kill us with kindness, embracing us, becoming close to us, being friendly, giving all sorts of money for Israel, all sorts of evangelical groups that walk around the United States and come visiting Israel. We love Israel. There are a few who really do, but many of them have an agenda which is one day to convert as many Jews as they can. And if anybody has any doubts about that, whenever you have a moment, you can go to a website called Jewish Israel, and the record of what evangelical groups are doing here in this country will find there. Jewish Israel, one word. I'm the rabbinic director of Jewish Israel. I don't do all of the legwork. There are people who are forever looking to find all sorts of information. Oh, do we have information? So the Rambam says to the Jews of Yemen, one of two, those who will want to destroy us utterly, physically, extermination. And then there are those who are going to try and sweet talk the Jewish people out of their religion, embrace them, love. So the Rambam says, this is what Yeshayahu was talking about. Kol kli yutzar olecha, any kind of weapon that is created in order to destroy you will not succeed. V'chol lashon takum itach, and any mouth that is going to be raised against you in order to talk you out of being Jewish, you will ultimately condemn them. Neither one of the two is going to succeed in the longer view of history. For the Rambam, of course, who knows what's going on now? The Rambam, it was a courageous statement for the Rambam to say. There's another letter of the Rambam that just came to my mind yesterday. Another one of his great letters. This is in the letter to the Jews of Yemen. There was another letter that was sent to Jews in other Muslim countries. Don't think that Muslim hatred to the Jewish people started with the establishment of the state or with the establishment of the first settlement. I said the dirty word. It's all a lie. In the days of the Rambam, there were Islamic statenics who conquered Jewish communities and gave them a choice. Either accept Islam or die by the sword. And the Rambam has an awesome letter that he sent to Jews in Muslim countries. This is nearly 1,000 years ago. Didn't start today. And it's not going to be solved by a Palestinian state. It's nonsense. They're killers. Unbelievable. Teenagers are going around and killing us. So here it was. It was yesterday in the Jerusalem Post, isn't it? Well, here it is. Monday, October 12th, that was yesterday, right? Yeah. Yemen government tells countries Jews, convert or flee. Convert or flee. 1,000 years ago, the same thing. Except that 1,000 years ago was not convert or flee. Convert or die by the sword. That brings me to something else. You know, people send you all sorts of emails. I get them. My wife gets them. But my wife, the ones my wife gets, she knows which one to send to me and which ones not to bother me with. But she sent me one yesterday. We printed it out this morning. And listen to this. Only 2 sentences I'm going to read from this. The article is about the beginning of the end of French society. France is falling into the hands of the Muslims. I'm going to read a sentence that's going to blow your mind, but in order to, you should understand the extent to which it should blow your mind, I have to tell you a little story. At the liberation of one of the concentration camps by the United States Army, they lined up festive gathering of all of the prisoners who are now free. Today they were freed. The American commander is going from one to another. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There are people from all sorts of countries, not only Jews, non-Jews as well. One of them says, well, I'm going to go back home to France. Next one says, I'm going to go back home to my town in Transylvania. Everybody is talking about going home. Commander gets to a Jew, says, yes, how do you feel today? The Jew says, today is the saddest day of my life. He says, what do you mean? The saddest day of your life? It's the day of liberation. So he says, Commander, all of these people here know where they're going. I have nowhere to go. That reminds one of, remember the song? Ruahim Delagain, now I'm going to read the last paragraph of this article by a French intellectual. On a sunny summer day, on the terrace of a typical Parisian cafe, a French ambassador, proud to regard himself as an embodiment of enlightened European and Republican principles, was having a drink with a Jewish friend. They were indulging in small talk about a famous line by the poet Paul Valéry: civilizations too are mortal. Civilizations too, it means civilizations can live, they can grow, develop, they can also die and disappear. Civilizations too are mortal. Suddenly the ambassador, he's a Frenchman, suddenly the ambassador fell silent, pondering for a few seconds, and then turned toward his Jewish friend. Of course you can always go to Israel, but us, where shall we go? You hear the difference in 70 years? You can always go to Israel. Where shall we go? 70 years earlier, everybody had a place to go except one. The Jew had no place to go. But there's another dramatic difference. I don't know, I've said it on a number of occasions in the last few weeks, and people like sort of, hey, I didn't think of that. My wife told it to some people yesterday, God didn't occur to me. There are 60 million refugees in the world today. I got my Time magazine only this morning. I had no chance. You know, I had a long davening. It was rushed. I didn't have the time to read Time magazine. But the whole magazine is about the 60 million refugees in the world. And I pointed out there are 60 million refugees in the world. Not a single Jew in the world is a refugee. For 1900 years, we were the constant refugees. My parents were refugees. My grandparents were refugees. The word was Flüchtlinge. Yeah. The German word for refugees. Our parents and grandparents fled from Europe. They fled from Galicia. 60 million refugees in the world, and not a single Jew is a refugee. Isn't that what the French ambassador said? You Jews, of course, you have a place to go. Has something dramatic changed in a period of 70 years? It's unbelievable. The change is awesome. Yeshayahu says. And the Rambam says this to the people of the Muslim world 1,000 years ago. They will try either to kill you physically or spiritually, and they're not going to succeed. There will be losses. There will be victims. But the Jewish people will simply survive it all. I don't know how much of the Haftorah we're going to get today, but of course one thing leads to the next. I'm just going to let it flow freely. Everything is just the opposite. I'll explain. Sometimes you can sum up Jewish history of this the last 70 or more years just by a few pictures. I have a few pictures in mind. You see a picture of a little boy with his hands up. Yeah. That's the Shoah. You see three paratroopers looking at the Kotel. You know it's the 28th day of Iyar, 1967, when Yerushalayim is liberated. Everybody in their own way has other pictures, but as one that is always going to evoke tears from me. There's a picture, 45, 46, long line of Jews walking across the Alps in the snow. Walking across the Alps in order to get to the Mediterranean in the hope of getting onto some unseen worthy boat that will make it through His Majesty's mighty fleet over salt. Not the Majesty, the fleet. Jews walking across the Alps in the hope of getting to Herzegovina. And you know, we should learn from this a little bit. We take an LL flight from New York to Eretz Yisrael, 9¾ hours. If it takes another 15 minutes, we're complaining. LL is always late. The movie was beneath contempt. And the dessert just was not what I expect to have on a plane. No, we complain. Thousands of Jews walked across the Alps. But wait a minute. Now, all the traffic is the opposite way. From Africa and Asia to Europe. The Europe that didn't want us is getting them. We were the ones who came to the Mediterranean coast, the northern coast of the Mediterranean, in order to make it here. Now they're going from all over the world there. Oi, the Europe that we know today is not going to be the same Europe in 5 years from now. In 10 years, almost certainly not. And then, God, when I read in the paper at the Czech border, Muslim, they try to call them migrants. No. There's a big difference between migrants and refugees. A migrant is somebody who chooses to pick himself up and just go elsewhere. I remember a conversation, he's I think in Yerushalayim or Nofayon, I'm not sure, Chaim Waxman, a sociologist. So he wrote a book 35 years ago, maybe 40 years old, A Study of American Aliyah. And early on in the book, he defines an American Ole. Now hold on to your seats. An American Ole is a free migrant of an innovative nature. And we just let that get into your dish, God. A free migrant of an innovative nature. Yes, Chaim, what did you need 4 or 5 words? You could have said it in one. A Meshuggahna. A holy Meshuggahna. And you would have taken it, everything included. They're not migrants. The 60 million people who are floating through the world are not migrants. They're refugees. They're running. They're running for their lives. They're running for their lives. By the way, It's an awesome story of human suffering. At the Czech border, you know what they do to the migrants, refugees? An indelible number on their arms. When I read that, everything is precisely the opposite. When I was growing up, and I... this was not in the book, you get this free. When I was growing up, and I go to Davin in the morning in Williamsburg, look around on shul, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 people roll up their arm, and there was a number on it. I don't know how many people are left today in the world with numbers. I saw all these numbers as I was growing up. We know the refugees as those who are fortunate enough to finally make it out of Europe and get to the United States. There's a lot more, but we'll save that. There's a lot more going on. There's a lot more going on. So the Rambam, Kol Kli Utsar. Eliyahu Logatsiyah, turn over the page for just a moment. Okay, there goes another one. You know what? No, I'm not going to read through the Rambam. I told you the Rambam. You trust me. I'm going to go to another story. Back to the front side. No. I told you some while ago, I told you parts of this story in brief. I'm going to elaborate slightly more, and that's going to explain what is clearly the most awesome part of this Haftorah, which is going to bring us to why is this the Haftorah for Parshat Noach. The story is the following. In 1942, it must have been March or April of 1942, Rav Herzog and his wife were in the United States. In the world, things were happening in the world. By May, sometime in May, Rommel, the Desert Fox, had begun a major push across North Africa. He was inching closer and closer to Egypt, to Alexandria and Egypt. By May already, the situation was critical. It was clear that the German plans were to make a final thrust into Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they estimate a third of the Jewish population. There were 400,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael. 400,000 Jews. Today, 6.3 million. 400,000 Jews, a third were carrying poison pills in their pocket. The Jewish agency had begun to plan a Masada-like last stand on Mount Carmel. The British, of course, had notified the Jewish community, if Rommel breaks through at El Alamein to Alexandria, His Majesty's forces are going to fall back into Mesopotamia. They're going to leave the 400,000 Jews of Eretz Yisrael without any protection at all. Britain is getting prepared to run for its life. And here it is, Rommel is already at the El Alamein. Rav Herzog and his wife are in New York. Rav Herzog tells his rabbinic friends that he was on a mission for Eretz Yisrael there. I must go back to Eretz Yisrael now. They told him he can't go back. The situation is so dire. Who knows what's going to be? I must go back. And he said, what a desecration of God's name that the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael is sitting in New York while the yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael is, God forbid, facing destruction. By the way, facing destruction not only from one side but from the other. The ultimate plan of Hitler, Yimach Shemo, when he invaded Russia was to make his way through Russia by land to Iraq, Iran, and then Syria and Eretz Yisrael from the north. So German forces would crush Eretz Yisrael from the south and from the north. But there was a little slight delay at the time. He arrived at a place called Stalingrad. Stalingrad. Unknown little town. Stalingrad. Anyway, the Rav tells his rabbinic friends, I must leave. I have to go. They tell him there are U-boats out in the Atlantic. Boats are being sunk. You can't do it. He says, I have to go. The Chilul Hashem, the desecration of God's name is that great. I have to go. He even went so far as to get in touch with either Cordell Hull or Morgenthau, top people in the American government. Finally, they got him two places for him and the Rebbetzin on a boat called the Robin Moore. The morning that they're supposed to board, gets a call from the captain to say that the there's no place for you on the boat. The boat was really for military personnel, and the Rav was beside himself, livid with anger. He was very upset. So he went to work, and then Chabonim, the place of silver, and others came to tell him, you can't do it, you can't go. And they finally, he got in touch with Governor Lehman, governor of New York, help him get a berth on a boat. And they finally got 2 weeks later on a boat called the New York, going to Cape Town, South Africa. 2 or 3 days after the previous boat, the Robin Moore had left, his secretary walked in one morning and dropped a newspaper on his desk. He opened up the newspaper. The Robin Moore had been sunk in the Atlantic and there are no survivors. That was the boat the Rav was supposed to go on. And then we hear the story, we can get through the story more quickly. He makes it by boat safely to Cape Town. And from Cape Town begins a fascinating, awesome, exhausting adventure of making his way from Cape Town to Alexandria, the top of all Africa, till he finally gets onto a plane. That has engine trouble, has to remain in Zimbabwe. The heat is impressive. They fix the plane and the plane leaves on Shabbos. He refuses to go on the plane. Everybody goes and they leave him and the Rebbetzin all alone in Zimbabwe. And it helps the Rebbe Shalom, miracle of miracles. Another plane is coming through Zimbabwe, picks up the Rav, takes him to Khartoum. They come to Khartoum and there are the people from his plane that left him behind. The rabbi. Finally, they make it. We're talking about a month. Finally, he makes it to Alexandria, gets onto the train at Alexandria, and as the train leaves from Alexandria, headed for Rehovot. In those days, you know, before all sorts of peace initiatives, you were able to go by train from Cairo to Rehovot. The Rav arrived in Rehovot, and there he said publicly, there was a large gathering of people welcoming the Rav back. They had been following his adventure. Many people had gathered in Rehovot, and there the Rav made the statement that has been attributed to him from that moment on and further. He had said it in New York. He said the following: our prophets told us there will be a first Churban, first destruction, and there will be a second Churban. There will never be a third destruction of Eretz Yisrael. And then he said, I guarantee Rommel will not enter Eretz Yisrael. That's awesome. This is in June of 1942. He assures the Jews of Eretz Yisrael Hitler will not set foot in Eretz Yisrael. And then of course there it is, the end of October, beginning of November, 1942. So there it is, Montgomery, Montgomery, Monty, you understand? And we've talked about the forgotten ally, you remember? The forgotten ally was Palestinian Jews who held up Rommel for a month in the Sahara Desert. But we're not going to talk about that now. And then, of course, the great statement by Churchill at El Alamein, the gate to Eretz Yisrael, the first defeat for Germany. Meanwhile, of course, the other German incursion is still stuck at this unknown little place called Stalingrad. And of course, Churchill said, before El Alamein, there were no victories, and after El Alamein, were only victories. Okay, something like that he said. Okay. But Rav Herzog made it very clear. There will not be a third Korban. When Jews return to Eretz Yisrael for the third time, we have a guarantee, a divine guarantee. Divine guarantee. How did he know that? How did Herzl know that? So before we go to the Haftorah, go down the tomb down at the bottom. That's a Medrash Tanchuma. Tovaracha. Bahashlishit Yivaterba. Those three words, the third will remain in her, appear in Zechariah, the Navi Zechariah. And the Medrash says on this, Shein it yashrin ba'artzom ela v'be'ula shlishit. Jews will only settle into the land permanently by the third redemption. Geula Rishona, the first redemption, Zubulat Mitzchayim, that is the redemption from Egypt. Geula Shindia, the second redemption, Zubulat Ezra, when Ezra came back from Babel after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Hashlishit, the third, that's us. Ein Lahefsek, no end. Eretz Yisrael will survive forever. We may go through difficult times, but we have a divine guarantee. Where did the Medrash get it from? Where did the Medrash get it from? Let's go to the Haftorah of Parashat Noach. B. Take a look at what's underlined. Berega katona zavtich. God says, for a brief moment have I forsaken you. Uberachamim gedolim akatzech. Uberachamim gedolim akatzech. I will gather you in with abundant mercy. I want to point out that the word rachamim doesn't only mean mercy. In Aramaic, the word rachamim means love. Uberachamim gedolim, with great love, I will gather you in. B'shetzef ketzef, with a swift moment of anger, hastarti panai rega mimech, I concealed my face for a moment from you. U'b'chesed olam richamtich, but eternal kindness will be my love. Omad bo'alei Hashem, says your Redeemer God. He could not be talking about the Geula of Mitzchayim, because they went into exile after that. He couldn't mean the Geula from Babel, because they went into exile after that. It's only the third time around. That's us. Watch the next two psukim. Ki mei Noach zok li asher nishvati, for like the waters of Noach that I swore, mei avor mei Noach od al haaretz, I swore that there will never be a mabul again, the waters of Noach will not again pass over the earth. Kein nishvati, so I swore, God says. Mitzof alecha, from getting angry with you, the Jewish people, I'm never going to get angry again. Umigorbach, and I'm never going to rebuke you again. Ki hehorim yamushu, the mountains can move, the hagvot to antenna, and the hills can simply collapse. The world can collapse. The chazim meitof loyal, mitech loyal bush. My kindness to you will never be shaken or moved. Ubrit shlomi, the covenant of my peace, lo tamud, will never be shaken. Amar says, Merachameich Hashem, the one who loves you. These two psukim are obviously talking about an eternal bond, an eternal covenant, a promise for all time. You know what? The connection to the seven, people say, you know, well, listen, it says, May Noach, the waters of Noach. And this is Parshas Noach. May Noach here, May Noach. That's not even coming close to what it's all about. What happens in Parshas Noach is that Noach is able to get God to commit himself in a way that is powerful, by covenant. God makes a covenant with Noach. Never again. There will be day, there will be night, there will be summer, fall, winter, spring. It will never change. we can bear testimony that day and night and the seasons continue uninterrupted. As solid as that covenant that God made with Noah, that's the covenant he now makes with the Jewish people. And he says, the third time you come back, you're here for good. This is obviously one of the places from which Rav Herzog was able to derive the third time we come to Eretz Yisrael, things will not, that's for good. The state will not collapse. Nobody will ever be able to conquer us. Oh, but we're going through a very difficult period now. Extremely difficult. So you have to know that there's another famous medrash. I shouldn't say a famous medrash, a medrash. In Shir HaShirim it says, Dome Dodi Litzvi. My beloved is like a deer. My beloved is like a deer. Nichse v'nigla. Nichse v'nigla. He's concealed and revealed. Concealed and revealed. Can you imagine a deer running through the forest, and you're looking at the forest. Now you see him, now you don't. Now he's in an open area, you see him. Trees, bushes, you don't see him. The Medrash says, That's how the redemption of Israel is. There are moments you see it, and then moments you don't. There are moments where there's a fall, there's a drop, and then there are moments shooting upward. The process of redemption is not a process one way, only in an upward direction. There are going to be moments of fall. But Rav Kook wrote that from every fall, we are going to emerge stronger than we were before. We're going to learn something from every fall. Okay, I have to tell you that idea. The Henkin couple that were killed, I didn't know the extent for the number of Torah articles that I have in my own home that were written by Tom Henkin. He had just turned 30 or 31. At 24, 25, he was writing Torah articles of such profundity. I'm just sitting day and night learning through his Torah. What a legacy he left. What a loss what this man could have been. I'm learning a beautiful sefer on the laws of kashrus. And then I take a look, the form and the cover and all the rest were made by Nama Henkin, the editor of the whole sefer, which is written beautifully, was by Eitan Henkin. I mean, I still remember his great-grandfather of Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was the Gadol B'Yisrael in the United States of America. It was when Rav Henkin passed away that Rav Moshe became the Posek of the United States of America. Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was a giant amongst men. So it's a difficult period we're going through. It's a difficult period. But we have to remember, number one, the process of Gula. Now you see it, now you don't. Now you see it, now you don't. We're going through, hopefully a brief period, during which it's difficult to see in which direction. That's why I told you, but you still have to see the awesome difference between 70 years ago and today. The French professor, you, Jew, you'll go to Israel. What are we going to do? Unbelievable. Let's do a little bit more of the Haftorah. So those are the Kimei Noah Zalkei. So you see, the whole story of the parasha, the whole story of the parasha is a story of destruction and then rebirth. A whole world is reborn. But that world is reborn with an absolutely firm promise, a covenant, that it will never again be destroyed. Or the last passage we read here just now. Chazdi meitech lo yamush u'brit shlomi, the covenant of my peace with the Jewish people, lo tamut, shall never falter. I went back, I ran through the Sedra, and I found the word brit, covenant, no less than 10 times in the story of Noah. The story of Noah is God's covenant with mankind. We once said, not a bad shiur, one of the shiurim that I liked, that Noah, let's say the following, for the last good number of years, I'm a fan of Noah. There were times that I found fault with him, but I regret that. No. Noah is the one who is able to elicit from the Rabbeinu Shlomo that shiur is based on the fact that when the novel is over, God commands Noah, say min ha-teva, go out of the ark, ata v'ishtecha, you and your wife, u'bonecha, your sons, u'neshei bonecha, and the wives of your sons with you. Why is that pasuk significant? Because when Noah was told to go into the ark, it says, go into the ark, you and your sons, your wife, and your daughters-in-law. And Rashi points out that they're going in separately because there will be no relationship between men and women during the course of the tragedy of the flood. But when it's all over, so God specifically says to him, go out, Noah, you with your wife, your sons and their wives. You know what it says in the next verse? Vayetze Noach, Upanav, Ishto, Unishay Panav. Noach goes out of the ark in defiance of God. He and his sons separate. His wife and his daughters-in-law separate. You know what Noach is doing when he defies God? You know what he realizes? Noah realizes that he has, so to speak, he has gone over a barrel. You want to rebuild the world? Who does it depend on? Depends on me and my wife, my sons and their wives. You tell me to go out of the ark now with my wife and my sons with their wives? So we should begin to create a new world for you? One that you might decide one day that you're going to destroy that too? Not in your life, God! I'm not doing it! We think that Noah is the silent one. He hardly says a word. You don't hear a word from him until the whole story is over. He doesn't say a word. Noah is silent. But what that Noah accomplishes with his silence, God has to make promise after promise, and sort of, I imagine Noah sitting there like this, listening to God, Middle East bargaining, not good enough. Not good enough, and the only thing that ultimately gets Noah to agree to be the father of mankind is when God tells him, not only is there a covenant, but the rainbow is going to be the reminder of our covenant. Never ever will it happen again. Day and night, the seasons, everything. There will never again be the waters of Noah. Only when Noah is absolutely assured that that's so, does he go out of the ark and begin building the world. So we're talking about destruction, rebirth, all based on a solid covenant. We're talking about the Golos, Churban of Klal Yisrael for 1900 years. Beginning the rebirth of a nation in Eretz Yisrael. The Navi is saying it's just like the covenant of Noah. Brit Shlomi. It's for good. It's for keeps. It's forever. That's quite a message. I'm going to do just a few things briefly. Now, if we made our way up from the end of our Torah to the to the beginning of our Torah, Roni Akora Lo Yolada, let the barren one sing. The barren one who hasn't given birth. You know who the barren one is? Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Has no children. Not even sing. Pitzki. Ah, open up your mouth with song, with tzahali and be full of joy. Lo chola, the one who didn't even have any labor pains. Because you know what's going to happen? Ki rabin b'nei shomei momi b'nei b'ula. Because the sons of the desolate one will be more than the sons of the inhabited one, Omer Hashem. Those, how many words is it? Six words. Ki rabin b'nei shomei momi b'nei b'ula. Awesome. My Zayda, when he read these words, could only say, you know, Yemir's Hashem's old Amish today, helping someday, someday. You know what the Pasuk is saying? The Pasuk is saying, I'll tell you what the Pasuk is saying. I'll tell you what the Pasuk is saying. If you know the punchline, don't say it. You understand? There was an article that appeared in the Jerusalem Post in 1990. In 1990, an article in the Jewish Post, some fella wrote that by the end of the century, a little bit after that, man, woman, and child is going to walk off a plane onto the tarmac at the Ben Gurion Airport, and a dramatic change is going to take place in the demography of the Jewish people. Man is going to walk off the plane, and at that moment, Eretz Yisrael is going to become the largest Jewish community in the world. We were talking about the 40s. There were 400,000, 6,300,000. Now, Eretz Yisrael has officially become the largest Jewish community in the world. When was the last time that Eretz Yisrael was the largest Jewish community in the world? Was it during the period of the second Beit HaMikdash? Absolutely not. The peak period of Jewish population during the second Beit HaMikdash was 2,350,000. We passed that nearly 50 years ago here. Nobody marked the day. So here it is. This fellow predicted that someday Eretz Yisrael is going to be the largest Jewish community in the world. And it's happened. Rabin b'nei shomema, the children of the land that was desolate are going to be more than Jews living elsewhere in the world. It's unbelievable. It's happened. Here, we're it. We make up those figures. At some later point in time, this article said, the majority of Jews in the world are going to be living in Eretz Yisrael. And that may be coming quicker than we expected. If the French are thinking of coming, the Belgians had better get out fast, fast. The English are always slow. I take it back. I have some friends, Englishmen, sitting here. It'll take them a little longer. Now, I have to make it clear. You must probably think that I'm brilliant, that I remember an article that appeared in the Jerusalem Post in 1990. Of course I do, because I wrote it. So, Rabin B'nai Sholmei Moni B'nai Pa'ula. This is fulfilled by us now in our day. And then watch the next. The next passage. Harchizi Lekom HaLech. You're going to need housing. All these people are coming. You need housing. Broaden the place of your tent. V'yiniyot mishkanotayich yatu. And the curtains of your dwelling should be stretched out. Al tachsochin. Don't try and save space. You need space. You need apartments. You need... V'yitegoter chazeki. And strengthen the stakes that hold down your tent. Kiyom and small tifrozi. To the red, light, right and the left, you're going to spread out. People are going to be coming over here. I say, we live in this city. It's not always the way it is this morning. You walk through the whole area around the Binyanei Oma. Do you see those hundreds, maybe thousands of beautiful apartments going up? Soon nobody will be able to remember Rehov Yirmiyahu, Tanuva over there, and the whole area of Geula, and high rises. When Shnella goes up, it's all changing, it's completely different. Somebody, I mentioned this yesterday, I spoke for a Muna woman, and a woman came over and told me that a granddaughter was in a Gan. They asked the children of Gan to make a picture of Yerushalayim. So this little girl drew a picture with a whole bunch of, what do you call them? The
cranes.
Those things, the cranes? Cranes. You look around Yerushalayim, you see cranes all over. So this little girl just made a whole bunch of cranes. That's the story of the country. That's the pasuk. The pasuk is saying, build, build, build. And then yesterday, the fact that they had that there was a $35 billion plan for housing in Egypt, and the whole thing fell apart at the seams, Magunish, Magunish. They desperately need housing. And here, what are you talking about? Here, they build, and there's no end. I remember who most of us do. Remember Bet Shemesh. Bet Shemesh was a little sleepy town. You understand? A sleepy town. I don't know if there are enough letters in the Hebrew alphabet. There's already a Ramat Bet Shemesh, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav. Ramot is already Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav. Then they're going to keep going. Zion, Tes, Tes. Who knows what's going to be with it? It's unbelievable. So the Haftorah is talking like the Sedra about a promise that you can bet on God's promise because God enters into a brit with Noah, and that covenant is forever. I just want to maybe add to the great Zmiris by Rabbi Yehuda Levi, Yonah Motzo Bo Monoach. He's talking about Shabbos. The dove, the pigeon that Noach sends out. So now, in Rabbi Yehuda Levi's Zmiris that he wrote, the Yonah represents Klal Yisrael is called a Yonah. Shir Hashirim, Yonah Ti B'Chagvei HaSela. Yonah Motza Bo Manoach. The Yonah found rest on Shabbos. I want to extend it, maybe Yonah Motza Bo Manoach, that we should hope and pray for the day that the Yonah is going to find peace here in Eretz Yisrael. Sunday, a main king in the zone. Just close it. Close it.